Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of the Talking to Yourself podcast. I am your host, Chris Chase, and on this episode, my wife, Rebecca, and I, we go back into the conversation of modesty from Modesty Part 2. There were some topics when we finished recording the end of last week's podcast. Rebecca, who's, not a podcaster, she said, I wish we could talk about this. Well, thankfully, she's married to the producer of the show, or the creator. I'm not the producer. Kenya is the producer and Ian is the audio producer. But like as a creator, director, of the CEO, CFO, COO of the show, I was like, well, why don't we just do some more conversation? And this one is a good conversation. I really enjoy it. It gives Becca a bit more time to kind of breathe out some stuff. We talk a lot about our own daughter and our son and what we want them to learn. We talk about just, again, some more past things that we've experienced in our own ministry journey and how modesty, the conversation affected her, affected me, and things like that. They say that the sequel is never as good as the original, and if you enjoyed the first conversation, you'll enjoy this one. Is it as strong as the first one? I don't know. It might be. It's up to you in terms of how you feel about that. But I think it's a really good conversation. It continues it on. We're also, just to kind of give you a little bit of background on the day, both of us ended up speaking at different churches. I spoke at our church and Brett spoke at different church. So we're coming in to this conversation. Both of us have spoken in the morning, and I think we both had a nap, or we were in need of a nap. So you kind of feel that at different points in the conversation, but I just love sitting down with Rebecca and hearing her thoughts. She is the smarter one of the two of us. And so I'm grateful that she was willing to do that and have that conversation with me and then with you as well. Next week's podcast, we're actually going to have the money talk. We're going to be talking about salaries. We're going to be talking about compensation. We're going to be talking about honorariums. And we're going to talk about that in the context of church and jobs. With the main question being this, should a job, especially a church, tell you what you would possibly be making if they hire you ahead of time, or should you find out about that in your last interview? We're going to be talking about that. I have two special guests who are going to be a part of that conversation. I'm really excited to have them because they are both two guys who are just, really, really, really smart. I might get a third guest. I'm not sure. So there's not going to be two sections of conversation that way. There's only going to be one. But we might take breaks and things of that nature, but it's going to be, I'm excited for the conversation. And I'm just really excited about what this can look like. And then really starting to make some plans for the summertime. I really want to keep this train moving. And I know last year I took a break in the middle of summer and then I didn't come back until earlier this past year. So I took a long time off with the show. And what I want to do is I want to kind of keep the train moving. And so I have an idea that I'm going to be floating on Instagram. And so if you're interested, thank you for everybody who is on Instagram, who voted on the Modesty Chat having a part two, who voted on the Money Chat, who are interacting with me on social media in order to help me do a better job of telling a story. And so I'm going to be putting some ideas out on social media, and I want to hear from you. Because I do want to keep this thing moving. And so season 3 will start sometime in the fall, but I have a 2.5 idea that I'm kind of toying with that I'd love to get your thoughts on. So that's what's happening this week. This week's show, we're talking Modesty Part 2, the sequel. We're talking Money Chat next week in the pod, unless something else happens in the world, hopefully. Today is Wednesday night. I'm recording this intro. Johnny Depp just won his defamation suit over Amber Heard, and the world is going ablaze on that. Again, like all these things sort of tie together, right? It's crazy. And so even if you're looking, like this is like nighttime in the Chase household, right? Like when you see the clips for this past week, if we release some clips, like there's sunlight shining in, and it's just ridiculous, right? We're not professionals here, but we have a good time anyhow. So without further ado, this is Modesty Part 2 with my guests, the honorable, the incredible, the very wise, the very fun, the best of the Chase household, Rebecca Chase. So the last time we sat down on this couch to talk on a podcast,
the only time we've ever sat down to talk on a podcast?
It's not true. We did once when I worked at the other place. We did a podcast that I created for the other place, and we did one together. Okay. This is our third time now. Okay. This is what I apologize about. It's public record. It's somewhere. If somebody was to Google that name.
Fast forward.
No, just fast forward anything. They Googled that and then they found it. So we did a podcast together. And then there was last week we did a pod together. Yeah. And now we are doing part two of that conversation. Right. So we're talking a little bit about modesty in that conversation. And the genesis of it was an Instagram post that I made and then a lot of hubbub about it. And then from there, I did a little bit of a conversation. But the thing that people really enjoyed was me sitting down with you and your perspective. And maybe it's because you're not on social media a lot. You don't share a lot of your opinions. You have a large folder on your Twitter of just tweets and drafts that you just kind of say, and then you will never, ever, ever
release. But they're gold.
But they're gold. Oh, I know they're gold. I know that. And the people who know you, it's funny when people responded to the podcast in my DMs, there's a number of people who know you and you were kind of like, well, we've always known that Becca, not necessarily college, but had all these things that she could say. And there's a whole bunch of other people who are like, yo, Becca's gold. And I'm like, yeah. But then I remember when we finished recording, you said to me, oh, there's so many things I wanted to say. And I wish I'd said this. And I wish I'd said this. I wish I said this, which is convenient because a lot of people were saying, hey, can you have Becca on the pod again to talk about this more? Can Becca kick you off the podcast? And can this become her own podcast? All those sort of things. So you have some fans out there on these streets. And so I thought that we could kind of broaden out the conversation a little bit. It doesn't need to be long with regards to the modesty conversation. Because when we talked a little bit last week, the conversation really stemmed on us as youth pastors and us, you know, doing life with teenagers and communicating what we at the time thought modesty was to them. But then there's that switch over. And then we talked a little bit about what it was like for us to go from these teenagers in church and this stuff, and then suddenly we're dating and then we're married, and then having to kind of like make that transition from like everything's off limits to smoking hot wife, all this sort of stuff. And there's a number of people who mentioned to me, and even in the comments, like that transition from not being allowed to do anything, not being allowed to see the opposite sex in a certain way, suddenly being like, you need to be the desired and to desire all the sort of stuff. Like it just became so much. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so there's that aspect of like the adult part, like what happens when you're in your mid-30s and you're not dating anybody? What happens when you're married and things aren't going well? Like, what does that look like? Or what does it look like when you're like, do the rules that you talked that we preached and put on teenagers when they were 16 in a protective manner, do those still apply when you're in your 30s and your 40s and over and all that sort of stuff? So what were some things that you thought about after we ended and we pressed record or we pressed stop and that sort of stuff?
Well, yeah, that was one. Just how we put all the emphasis, and we touched on it a little bit, emphasis on the young people. If we are passionate, if we really believe what we say we believe about modesty, then that message should carry over and be applied to our adults, our single adults. But that's why I think we need to go back and just reevaluate our messaging, because it seems to be more about controlling the young people. Whatever needs to be done to get them to not have sex before marriage is like the goal. That's where all our emphasis goes on that. And I don't think we do a good job at it, because it's not a message that does translate over into adult years. And it needs to be, I'm not saying that it should be the same message for everybody, but there's just no message. Like after you're in your 20s and your 30s, there's just nothing, right? We don't talk about it.
So if you were going back, it feels like the season one of Talking to Yourself podcast, if you were going back, you know, to early 20s, Rebecca, Bible college, Rebecca, like And maybe Bible college is a bad example because Bible college just feels like in the extended youth group experience, right? But like, if you were going back to young adults, or if you were talking to you in your 20s and 30s, like, what would that conversation look like in terms of what modesty is and what modesty isn't?
But I don't know at that time in my life. And even now, modesty for me is not a huge deal. And it might be because of when I was young, I just had no desire to dress in any way but modestly. I don't know if that's because I grew up in the church and it was just kind of always the message that was there, or maybe it's just who I am. Maybe it's just my personality. Maybe it's just what I like. I don't know at this point in my life. But that modesty talk, I didn't feel like it was ever an issue for me. But I did know, even though I dressed very modestly, I didn't know that if someone were to look at me with lust in their heart, that would be my fault. Mm. Like I knew that from a young age, and I knew that I was always dressing modestly. And it was like a battle in my mind of how do I prevent this? What else could I do? Mm. What else could I do?
Dress more modestly.
Right? Like hoodies in the summer. It doesn't make any sense. So I don't know what I would tell little baby Becca. She was doing her best. She was doing a good job. But I think that's the message that we should be telling young people. Like, you're doing your best. Mm. You know, if you're faithful to Jesus, you keep your eyes on Jesus. I don't want to get all preachy.
That's what the people want.
Okay.
To the people want, but like I think that you're saying something that makes a lot of sense, in the sense that to be repetitive, that you could be doing all of the right things,
yes,
and somebody could still look at you and go, "Hey, mama,"
right, and then
somehow like that's your fault,
yeah,
like you caused them
it
to.
Doesn't make any sense. The math ain't mathing,
and the idea of like someone saying, "Well, you dress like that way, that means you asked for it," but if you are, to use a term of how the church would use it, dressing modestly, like not bringing attention to yourself, and someone's still like, hey, baby, psst, psst, ayo, babes, right? Like catcalling, that sort of thing. Somehow that's still your fault because you were showing your ankle, or, you know, your hair was down, or you were walking. You were outside.
And again, whether or not that was actually spoken to me, like, I don't think anybody actually said those words to me.
But yeah, nobody was saying, hey, babes.
It was the messaging. No, not that part. The part about it being my fault. Like, I don't think anybody ever said, you know, someone cat calls you, it's your fault. But it's just, again, the messaging that you get after sitting through so many, you know, sermons or youth rallies or youth camps. It just, I think that, again, that's why it's important for a woman's voice to be here. Mm. It's just the way that we interpret that and take it on is different than what a man would.
And I agree with you. Like, it's different and there's less responsibility, it seems like. You know, if you're looking at modesty from the idea of what you wear, even though we know that modesty is way broader than that, modesty isn't defined that way. Modesty is defined more so by humility, by how you conduct yourself in full, not just in what you wear. But if we're looking at that example of modesty, it seems like the responsibility falls, again, on women to do everything differently, to do everything better, because men aren't mature enough to be responsible. So, you know, in dealing with teenage boys, if we kind of go back that way, they're not mature enough to handle attraction. They're not mature enough to handle lust. Therefore, women have to take on that responsibility and the blame. So if a guy gives in, you know, it's a woman's fault. We're seeing that right now in the SBC, uh-huh, Southern Baptist Convention, how many letters are coming out as this long list of men who have been, you know, not caught in the act of adultery, but like an actual like abuse and misconduct. Mm-hmm. Many of them are writing letters saying like, I was invited and I gave in. Mm-hmm. I was, and somehow, mm-hmm, like it's the woman's fault that they did all of this sort of stuff. we've invited guys to like to give away responsibility from the time of their teenagers and say, hey, listen, she looked at me and I crumbled. So where does the responsibility lie? Because it should be on me. Like, I should be taking the L if I do that. Men should be taking the L if they do that, and not saying like, well, you know, she was breathing.
Right. And that's why we need to be talking about this, because it all feeds into that narrative of men. That's not me. I don't like attack all men or anything, but it does. It feeds into the narrative that men don't bear as much responsibility, and that they can, it's a tale as old as time. That woman that you put me here with, it was her. And they will pass the blame. Again, not they.
Well, yes. Yeah. Well, but you know, like it's scary, because that same thing that we create a divide among teenagers then goes into adulthood, then goes into the workforce, then goes into family, goes into all of these sort of pieces. This idea of like, women are the ones who bear the brunt of the shame and the guilt. And that's not saying that men don't, and that you know, that men don't feel a certain ways about it. But traditionally, when we're preaching it, it often goes, ladies, you know, you got to be worried. Like, I've never heard anyone say modest is hottest to me when I wear a tank top. I purposely wore a long sleeve shirt because we're recording this in my own video. And I was like, listen, you know what I mean? You get me, fam. But no one's ever said modest is hottest to me on anything.
Can you remember any sermons or messages where you were included in that, in a modesty talk?
No, it's more the conversations for men were around lust, don't watch pornography, be men of valor, and the girls in your youth group are your sisters, which is a weird thing to say to somebody, because then eventually you are going to marry one of your sisters. It's just like the whole conversation is really, really, really weird. Like, think about it. Yeah. You know, I look at you as like my sister, but then one day I'm gonna look at you like my, like, nope. Exactly. It's just like, but like that, but that was, but in terms of like no one ever had a conversation with me about like what I wore. No one, it was more about pride of attitude than it was about my actual clothing. Whereas for women, it was always like, you know, be careful because guys are visual. I think every man's battle ruined people, because like, I think that's, maybe that's where everything kind of started, the whole idea of like men are visual and women are more intellectual and feelers, but men are like, they're hunters and they look, even though like, if you go, like, if you look at lions, the male rarely ever hunts, it's the woman who does. The guy's kind of sits around, just kind of like, yo, did you get the food? I bet. Like, it's just a weird sort of thing that we've sort of preached and given away and said, like, this is the way it is. And it's created a group of young men, older men, who just kind of assume, like, women are going to be this way, and then they're going to get married to me, and then they're going to be this way. And if they dress a certain way, and I fall, it's their fault. And if we're married and they don't do what I want, then it's their fault.
I think in adulthood, the closest that we get to a modesty talk, which is not really modesty talk at all, is the Billy Graham rule.
Oh, right. The Billy Graham rule.
I've heard that a long time. Well, just how a man can't be alone with a woman. Mm. And there's, I guess, a twofold purpose in that. It's supposed to be to like protect the anointing. Visual of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And to protect the man, to protect the woman. I
really don't think the woman has any agency in that. It's really to protect the Lord's anointed man.
Right. To protect the man from anyone being able to say something bad about him for being alone. And also to protect him from being tempted by a temptress.
Yes.
A woman.
Yes. Essentially.
Yes.
Yes. Are we just going to pause there?
I'm thinking it through in my head because I don't really know if that translates the same, but it just popped in my head.
but no, I think but I've heard the Billy Graham rule used multiple times, right? Like how I'll never be, you know, my wife would never want me. I would never be alone with. And it's like, okay, well, a couple things there. it seems like in our world, that's the only world where that happens. Like in every other world of life, in every other sort of profession, people are like, listen, I'm going to get Subway. I want to come with me get Subway. And like, that's just a thing where for us, it's kind of like the worry about the look causes the train to move. Right. It's just a weird sort of like all of these things that we, with best intentions, with the best of intentions, in order to, I don't know, protect the integrity of the kingdom, ultimately often does a lot more damage along the way.
I remember giving a male coworker a ride
to
a meeting.
What?
I know. But fellow pastor, we were going to a staff meeting, and I gave that fellow pastor a ride to that staff meeting like 5 minutes away. And I remember getting scolded for it when we arrived, because we shouldn't have been in a car together. And whether or not the scolding was from a place of good intention,
it wasn't.
But let's say
it wasn't. Okay, fine. Let's give it the benefit of the doubt.
I'm a gracious person.
Let's say it was somebody else that wasn't that person.
Sure.
Okay. Let's go that route.
Wow. Okay. So whether or not that came from a place of good intention, let's say it did, where me and this other person, we're trying to be protected from having anything bad perceived about us. I still interpreted it in a way that I felt icky.
Yeah.
Like I felt I had done something very wrong. I felt shame about it when that was silly. Like why would I put that on myself? Why would someone else put that on me when it was just the most wholesome, best of intentions thing?
Yeah. I think that we get more concerned with the performative part, right? The performative part, like this idea of performative holiness, like it's what it looks like before what it is, because we're worried about what somebody else would be possibly perceiving, possibly thinking. And same thing with clothing. Well, like if somebody dresses a certain way, well, then you know what sort of person they are, right? Like if a teenager dresses, well, you know what sort of person they are. They look like they're somebody who takes their life seriously because of this, or they look like this, or they're like that. All of these sort of pieces, they all work together, and they all sort of create this train of thought that leads people into having to unlearn a lot of things in their adult life, or pass it all on to other people because it's what they think is actually true.
Right. Okay, here's another thing that I wanted to mention that we didn't the first time. And this is a lot. This is a can of worms. So maybe we'll leave this for the comments. We'll put it out there and leave it for the comments.
Yeah.
But there's also this discrepancy, I guess, between, let's say, a thin, attractive woman wearing spaghetti straps. You know what that is, right? Okay. Mm. A very thin tank top with thin straps. That is immodest, and that would cause somebody to stumble. Whereas somebody who is not, air quote, conventionally attractive, somebody who is maybe considered overweight by society standards, wearing something, and that's immodest because it's unpleasant to look at.
Mm.
Like there's a whole gross, terrible thing right there as well that we need to talk about. I'll leave that for the comments. Okay.
Oh no. Well, but I think that's been brought up before, but it is true. Right. It's immodest for different reasons. And the way that men respond to that from a protective sense is different for different reasons based on what you just said, because that's a whole thing on beauty standards and what we think is smoking hot and what we think is desirable and all this sort of stuff. Even in the ranks and in the doors, the walls of the church, we still have that sort of understanding or a lack of understanding, but this sort of like, this is what it is. Right. And that is something that is like, oh, mama mia. And that's like, oh, whoa, listen, you gotta cover, like we were calling for things for different reasons, and it's extremely gross. And then you have poor women on either side of the coin who are feeling shame upon themselves for various different reasons because of the male gaze or the adopted female gaze based on what they've learned from men.
Right. And they're just, it's just piled upon them. There's
over no and over escaping again. It. Yeah. And like, even so we have a daughter, she's 13 and she's in the midst of kind of figuring out who she wants to be and how she wants to dress and how she wants to kind of be at this stage of her life. And that's going to change. We're going to have conversation with her, I'm sure, between now and her mid 20s in terms of how she presents herself. When you think of her, when you think of Ellie, like, what are the things that you're hoping for her in light of all these conversations that are happening around us? The conversations are likely, like, we're one podcast. We're not going to change the world necessarily with one conversation, but like these, meaning that these conversations are still going to be happening around us. And these sort of idea of like, this is what modesty is. She's still going to go to camps and other events where they're going to say, ladies, wear this, men, do what you want. So how do you see from a mom's perspective, from a woman's perspective, helping her along in that journey?
I don't think we should get Ellie on here, but I don't even know how she would respond if we asked her what modesty is. Hmm. It's not something that we talk about with her. And for me, I know I don't want to have that talk with her about modesty. Like, I think we're just focusing on building her confidence and just making wise choices in general and trying not to think about what other people think. Like, I think that's enough right now. Mm. And when we focus on those things, I think I am trusting anyways that she's going to be a strong, confident teenager going into adulthood, as long as we can, you know, help with those tools that she needs to do those things right now. And maybe again, I'm reacting because like the pendulum is swinging the completely other way for me now, that I don't want to go there with her. Mm-hmm. I don't want to put that on her at all because I don't want her to have that shame and that confusion that I did. So I'm just trying to build her up right now as best as we can.
Yeah. Yeah. Like from a dad's perspective, like I remember, I think it was last summer, she wanted to get different bathing suits. And I remember having that moment of kind of going like, and you had to talk me off the ledge because I'm like, you know, she needs to be wearing like a sweatshirt in the pool, right? Because I'm thinking from an older sort of model of protective. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to be able to have the conversation with her as opposed to dictating to her. Maybe it's a whole conversation about like, again, men policing women's bodies, which we can go as far as, you know, what's happening in the States in terms of government and, right? Like all this sort of stuff. Like, but the idea of like, allowing her, walking with her through maturity to make that decision for herself.
I think there's also like a component of that with not putting the whole modesty thing on her, that I am also trusting and believing that the boys, not just the boys, just the people in her life are good decision makers as well. Mm. Like, she's not surrounded by, you know, predators. I don't want to think of the men in her life and the young people in her life as, you know, some kind of gross visual monsters that always have terrible thoughts. Like, that's not good to do either.
Yeah.
Like, we shouldn't be putting that on young men either.
But that's something that we have had inherited in us, right? Like, well, we have to be careful. We have to do this. We have to do that. And walking around and saying instead, like, no, like, I think of, you know, we go to camp every summer and it's the same young guys every summer that we see, that we know, that we have grown to know them and know their families and know enough about them to know, like, if they're all hanging out at a bonfire, I'm not worrying because these are guys who respect her and guys respect themselves. Mm-hmm. And if there's an attraction, we'll deal with that as it comes, but we're not worrying about them being like, well, you know, like, that fear-based thing, right? Right. That fear-based thing is something that gets preached in our minds. We have to kind of unplug ourselves from it as well.
Yeah, I think that's where your dad instincts come from, where you want her covered because you have this fear that, you know, boys are predators and can never have good, pure thoughts.
And then from there, the idea of like, we talked about this a little bit last week, but the idea of like, when attraction becomes obsessive, that's when it becomes lust. And that can be on anything, you know, a lust for money, a lust for power, a lust for prestige, a lust for attention. All these things are attraction when it gets mutated and distorted that way.
Yeah.
And so helping Ellie and other kids understand like this idea of like, it's okay if you this, but if you okay if you feel this way, but like let's kind of work on this other stuff first and have this conversation in real time as opposed to going like, no, you're not allowed, into, you know, putting Rapunzel in the cellar until her hair grows, that sort of thing.
Right. We have a son too.
Yeah.
And equally we need to be thinking about this on for him. Where again, we shouldn't be having these conversations just with Ellie. We're having conversations with him about respect and bodily autonomy.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is, so, and maybe this is an interesting space to kind of stop the conversation until part three happens down the road. So in the comments in my original Instagram post, there was a guy who kept on asking me 3 or 4 times. So as a Christian father, will you have a conversation with your daughter about modesty? And I would answer him, but I knew like Admiral Akbar, like it was a trap. Like I knew it was a trap. Like I knew he was, I was like, I'm not falling for the Jedi mind trick, my guy. Like I'm just not doing it. And I was like, well, I think that I would talk to both my kids about what it means to respect people and blah, blah, blah. So you could talk to your daughter as a Christian father, you could talk to your daughter about modesty. Like why? It goes back to what we're talking about before. Like, we have a son and yet the conversation often always skews towards what the woman does. I did that in this conversation. I did that. The conversation kind of skews that way, as opposed to remembering like we have a son and a daughter, a son who may end up being attracted to girls one day, right? Like in being like, I like them, that sort of thing. And having that conversation with him about who he is first, the same sort of way, how he carries himself, not from a clothing perspective, but how he carries himself from the inside out.
Right.
Right. How he respects other people from the inside out. Same thing with her, as opposed to going like, well, Liam will be fine. Boys will be boys. Mm-hmm. Boys will be boys. But let's, you know, make sure that, you know, ladies are wearing all just garbage bags like Missy Ellie in the I Can't Stand the Rain video.
Ellie does love the 90s. So.
She does, though. She does. And she's a big fan of, like, baggy jeans and baggy
That's
t-shirts.
True. That's true.
Right? And she's in sewing class, and she made that little a crop top sweatshirt. She's like, I really don't like this. And she made it. And she's like, I don't like this sort of thing. Now, that might change down the road. And I'm probably going to be the one who has to deal with that. Like how do I feel about that more than anything else?
That's true. Yeah.
Right. But it's having the conversation together and you know, there's going to be other parents, I'm sure, who are listening to this going like, nope, Moz is hottest for my daughter. Mm-hmm. What about your son? Is Moz hottest for your son, or does it not matter because boys will be boys? Right. Like that sort of thing. Like, and balancing the scales as opposed to letting it be, well, bet, like, men are predators and men are horrible, therefore, and, you know, and to be fair, you know, some men are horrible, right? Like, let's keep it a buck, right? Like, some men are catcall-y and that sort of stuff like that, but it's working with those guys, like, you can be better than this. You ain't got to do this. Like, you can trust yourself. Like work on being responsible and trusting yourself that you can actually be in spaces where you're not going to lose your head. You feel me? Like you're not going to lose yourself because like a woman looks at you and says, I like your shirt. You're like, oh my God. Well, just like, thank you and keep it moving.
Yeah. You don't have to be gross.
You don't have to be gross. Like if that's the lesson in all this, then you don't have to be gross.
You don't have to be gross.
Any last words, Rebecca?
That was it. That was it for me. I'm out.
Well, we'll do part three soon enough at some point. People want you to do your own podcast. They would take away my podcast and give it to you.
I am so sweaty right now. This is my nightmare.
All right. Well, we will. That's the perfect note to end on. We'll take a break. This has been another edition of Talking to Yourself with Chris Chase. Our show producer is Kenyon Walters. Our audio producer is Ian Walters. Thanks again to our special guest, Rebecca Chase. I will see her at supper time later on today. fan of the show, please do us a favor and leave a kind 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. And please make sure to tell a friend, because we want them to hear what you like to hear, which is this podcast. See you next week.